Okay, good afternoon. We just concluded the meetings. As you know, we were tentatively scheduled to come back to some competition committee matters in the morning. We were able to address all those this morning, so we have adjourned the meeting as of just a few minutes ago. I would say since I was here yesterday, there were two key areas of focus in the room. One is continuing our focus on the game presentation, the efforts, the package that we have, both from a football standpoint as well as a media standpoint, to make the game presentation, the game experience for our fans, even more compelling than it is today. That includes removing or lessening distractions, interruptions from the game, and keeping the focus on the action of the game. Second, we spent a great deal of time this morning on the competition committee matters. Rich, as the chairman, is going to go through some of those issues that we addressed today. Some that we tabled will also be able to talk to you about why we're tabling them and why, and our focus over the next couple months on getting those done. But one of them I would touch on up front would be the player celebrations. The committee did quite a bit of work on that. They had some discussion this morning on that. I asked it to be tabled. I'd like to meet with a group of players to try to get some more input from them. We also want to do a little more work on just bringing clarity to the rule while allowing our players more ability to express themselves, to celebrate. We want to see that. We obviously want to put in reasonable safeguards against taunting and acts that we would think reflect poorly on, obviously, all of us. So we believe we can do that. We believe there's a great deal of focus on that. And I'm confident in May we'll get to that point. So let me have Rich touch on a couple of the competition committee matters, and we're both here for answer questions.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. So competition committee-wise, let me start, first of all, with the committee and the view on where the game is. If you'll see our report, which I'm sure parts of it will be passed out to you, you'll see that, you know, in the introduction, we make the case that the game is in a really good place. There's two ways to look at competition, right? One is just game on game, and that's, in our case, margin of victory. I know you've seen the stat published, but, you know, to have the third smallest margin of victory in the history of the game is an impressive stat for us, given the fact that the other 2 years that are have a lower margin are 1935 and 1932. And I would bet you points per game, we're not 45 points per game at that time. So half. So that's a really good thing for us. So that's game by game. And then I think when we look at competition and where we are in all 32, we are a very competitively balanced league. I think this was another year in which I think it's the 27th consecutive year in which we had at least four teams qualify for the playoffs that didn't qualify the year before. So that, you know, to us, those are good stats. I have a stat about fourth quarter comebacks and the fact that we had 72 of them, but I really don't like to talk about comebacks. So I would tell you that with respect to player safety, as a committee, I think we were really pleasantly surprised in watching video that we typically don't like to watch, which is we watch video of every injury, every major injury, injury type, whether it's lower leg, whether it's shoulder, whether it's head, whatever it may be. And I think we were impressed when we watched the tape this year. And it's a credit to our players, to our coaches, to college football, and to high school football that you are seeing players adjust the way they play the game and playing within the rules and trying to comply with some changes that from a player standpoint have been hard and have taken time, but I think we really saw a good video this year of how players are trying to play the game well within the rules. And so I think that was, for us, that was a good thing and something that we've seen coming, but I would say this year it was very clear. Rules-wise, you know, you've seen the rules that passed. The commissioner, as he said, we had some rules that were tabled. We had 15 proposals this year, 7 by clubs. 3 of those club proposals were withdrawn, so we voted on the rest. We tabled 1, and then on the bylaws, I think we again had 3 bylaws proposed by clubs, all of which were either tabled or withdrawn. And then we changed, we voted on a couple of the competition committee ones. And that's kind of where our report is. So if you've got questions, we'll answer questions. Commissioner or myself or Dean will take whoever has questions.
We have microphones on the sides. Please raise your hand and name an outlet, please. Mark Maskey?
Mark Maskey from the Washington Post. Rich?
I don't know which one's whose. So you take your new one. That way you'll feel better about it. Yes.
Rich, the committee's recommendation for ejections and suspensions for certain illegal hits.
Yes.
Is it accurate that that will be enacted as a point of emphasis, so there is no vote? And can you sort of explain how you expect that to work in practical application?
Yeah. First of all, you know, as I said, I started with the idea that we like the tape and we like it a lot. So don't take the fact that we're emphasizing the potential use of suspension for first-time offenders as we've got a problem. That's not the case. We had three or four plays that we showed to the union when we met with the players and that we showed to our coaches and that we said, you know, we recommend as a committee that if the player isn't ejected on the field, and that's a very difficult thing, and we don't typically get ejections for football plays during a game. We get ejections for other reasons, but not football plays. That we recommend suspension, even for a first-time offense. Why? Because the hits were very egregious, and we quite frankly just want to get any of those hits out of the game. And we think one way to get them out of the game is suspension, because we think that is the ultimate deterrent to all players to not have those type of plays occur. Didn't have very many of them. Don't expect it to happen a lot. But it was a point of emphasis, and it was something that will be looked at this year.
Roger, it seems that no matter what happens, every once in a while, people think maybe it's a head trauma, relocation, something you do, where they think it's going to really harm the NFL, you're going to lose fans. Nothing harms you guys. That doesn't happen. Do you have any concern that eventually people are going to get tired of the teams moving or other controversies, and how important is it to you to continue to sustain?
Kevin, we sort of disagree with your premise. We disagree with your premise that nothing harms us. We're a league that has a great deal of public attention. We hold ourselves to the highest possible standards. When we don't hit it, we work hard to try to get to that standard. We recognize that the trust of our fans and the faith that we're doing things that are in the best long-term interest of the game are critically important. And we're going to do those because those are the right things for the NFL and our fans and our players. So we're committed to doing the right things. We know that not everyone's going to agree with that from time to time. But we do believe that our future is bright when we look down the path because we're willing to make the changes that are necessary. Game presentation is a great example of that. We think that this is something that we've been studying for the last couple of years. We now have fan research to back it up, to help guide us, to make sure that we're getting the right solutions to some of these issues. And we think this is going to make our game experience, whether it's in the stadium or on television or on another device, much more compelling. And that's what we have to do. We have to continue to try to get better. And that was really the focus of this meeting to a large extent, is innovation, getting better. Those are all things we're going to continue to work on.
Hey, Roger. Ben Volen from the Boston Globe. Have two quick questions for you, if you don't mind. On September 7th, the Patriots will be hosting the kickoff game. I understand it's 5 months away, but do you happen to know where you'll be that night?
I don't, but I plan to be at the kickoff game, man.
On a more serious note, the Raiders...
Oh, that wasn't serious?
back home, it certainly is, but the Raiders moved to Las Vegas. Obviously, we all know about Las Vegas having dozens of casinos there. Today, an entrepreneur came out and said that he plans on opening a Raiders-themed brothel that has VIP access for Raiders players. How much did the league consider some of these pitfalls when agreeing to allow the Raiders to move to Vegas, and will you work with the Raiders to help make sure? Brandon Marshall also said that putting 21-year-old kids in Vegas near the Strip can be overwhelming. How much do you plan to work with the Raiders to help ease any of those concerns?
Well, Ben, I think we have an obligation to do that with all 32 teams. My experience is that 21-year-olds can learn to find trouble in a lot of different places, by the way. So that's one of the reasons why we have focused so much on our personal conduct policies. And it's educating, helping players make better judgments, giving them better information so they avoid problems. These are the types of things that have been very effective. In fact, you've seen over the last 2 years, I think you have the statistics we went over today, but we've seen 40% reductions year after year the last 2 years when we revised our policies, and I think they've been quite effective. So we're going to have to obviously keep a focus on that, no matter where our franchises are.
Barry. Right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Barry. Barry Wilner, Associated Press. This is for Dean or for Rich. The passage of using the Surface tablet for the officials went through. What about using video on the sidelines for players and coaches? I know it's been discussed. Was it discussed here? Where does that stand?
Yeah, video on the tablets on the sidelines was discussed. I think that's something that will continue. We've heard from our coaches and from our clubs where they stand on it, and I think that's something as the technology continues to improve, it will continue to be part of the discussion.
We have Sam Farmer again.
Roger, Sam Farmer.
I don't know where you are.
These things would have been sort of unbelievable a few years ago. We've had 3 relocations in a 14-month span, Las Vegas getting a team, the Raiders staying in Oakland for at least the next 2 seasons, the Chargers playing in a 30,000-seat stadium. Does this mark the start of a new era for the NFL, and what specific challenges lie ahead?
Sam, you know, we had a number of relocations in the 90s, and it was probably, I believe it was 4 in a very short period of time, maybe even a year. So that's an unfortunate circumstance, but it comes after a great deal of work to try to resolve the issues. We've been successful in keeping our franchises where they are. Unfortunately, we weren't in this case. We want to continue to find ways to be creative in finding those solutions in those markets. But we also have stability for those teams now. Those teams, that wasn't something that just started in the last year or two. They've been struggling with stadiums for at least a decade in almost every one of those cases. So we now have stability in that case. We have 2 franchises back in the entertainment capital of the world. You don't have to ask me your questions anymore every year. And the reality of it is that is providing us more stability long term. But we also understand how painful that is when it happens. We certainly understand from a fan perspective how difficult it is. So that's why we work harder to try to get that stability so it doesn't happen.
Ed Graney, Las Vegas Review-Journal. Two quick parts. One, what would you attribute what seems to be a more progressive thought in that room about gambling from those 32 owners than maybe 10 or 15 years ago it wasn't? And two, do you foresee at any point the league, before they get there, would request of the gaming commission to take them off the boards in their games?
I would probably tell you that I think society in general has a little bit of a change as respect to gambling in general. We've seen that. I think we still strongly oppose in that room and otherwise legalized sports gambling. The integrity of our game is number one. We will not compromise on that. But I also believe that Las Vegas is not the same city it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It's a much more diverse city. It has become an entertainment mecca. It is the fastest growing city in the country. So I think when you look at what Las Vegas is today, what it was a decade, 2 ago, I think it's a much different city. And they made a very compelling proposal, which the ownership obviously approved overwhelmingly.
Would you take them off the board, or would you ask for that?
I don't think we're contemplating that at this point, in large part because you have the regulatory environment there, which actually could be beneficial in that case. So we'll study it further, but I think at this point in time, that's not our position.
Yeah, Roger, do you foresee...
I'm right here. Disagree. Right here.
Yes.
You mentioned how attitudes have changed towards sports gambling. Do you foresee?
I said gambling, just to be clear.
Do you foresee a day where you guys are working to help keep gambling above board because of the possibility that it could be legalized in places other than Nevada, and in that way too? Are there any caveats in the agreement that are specific to Las Vegas that relate to the gambling issue?
We did not change any of our gambling policies in the context of the Raiders relocation. It wasn't necessary. The Raiders didn't ask us to do that. We don't see that as changing our current policies. What your broader question about continuing our efforts on gambling, that is a major risk for us. And I think we have to make sure that we continue to stay focused on making sure that everyone has full confidence that what you see on the field is not influenced by any outside factors. That's our number one concern. That goes to what I consider the integrity of the game. And we will not relent on that.
Okay, we'll go to Perez Cal, Kansas City.
I don't have a microphone.
You're loud enough.
Yeah, okay, Scott. Hey, Roger, do you have a general sense for when we might see another cold weather outdoor Super Bowl? Just a general sense?
I don't. We did have an update this afternoon briefly on the process for selecting the next series of Super Bowls. I don't think we've asked for anyone to apply. I know there's some interest, but until we see who applies, I won't be able to give you any judgment on that.
Go on here, left, Mark Curry.
Yes. Commissioner, you addressed the fact that 21-year-olds can get in trouble in any city. But Las Vegas does present special challenges, and do you contemplate some policy changes that might, for example, keep players out of sports books? Will there be new policies put in place regarding these special challenges?
Sure. Yeah, we have
policies. Year-round banning from the casinos or brothels or whatever?
Well, we...
Sorry.
Okay. We have policies in place now. Obviously, we'll continue to evaluate those policies. If we think something specific needs to be done in Las Vegas or any changes to our policy, we obviously retain that right to do that, and we will continue to look at that.
Will players be allowed to visit sports books while they're in Las Vegas?
No, that's in violation of our policy today.
Yeah, Bob Condotta with the Seattle Times. For Rich, just on the rule banning players leaping over the line on field goals and point afters, just curious the discussion on that and how big a factor was the players' union recommendation initially play into that?
So that rule came, Philadelphia proposed it. We all knew during the season at some point it was going to get discussed because we saw many instances. As teams began to understand how to block it, it became a little more concerning, right? Early on, teams didn't know how to block it. The guard wasn't getting up in the air. The center wasn't getting up. Nobody was chipping on the player. The player was getting a free run. Well, all of a sudden, the player wasn't getting a free run, and now the player was coming down at a really bad angle. So we knew it would be discussed. Philadelphia submitted it. When we met with the Players Association to a person, they were quick to say, we don't like this play. And we really don't like the fact that somebody on Monday gets selected to have to do that play. And be that person. So that absolutely always plays a part in our decision. One thing we do a good job of, and the commissioner started a number of years ago, it's been going for a long time and it's in our CBA, is when we meet with them, we have a really good session where there's kind of, we hear everything they've got to say and everything they like and don't like. But we also get feedback on proposals, and that was one where they universally said, we want that play taken out. So when we proposed it today, we said that to the membership. The vote was 32-0, and that was a pretty easy play to get out.
In the back, Adam Knappel.
This is also for Rich. Rich, when you talk about pre-draft visits, there was an amendment made for timing and testing. Can you explain what that entails?
It took us 10 years to get this, and you expect me to be able to tell you. Okay.
In a second.
This is a very, it's a very technical thing. We have a local workout policy and procedure that's been in place forever that talks about the fact that you have an unlimited amount of local workouts you can have if the player either resides in the metropolitan area or goes to school in the metropolitan area. The problem with the rule was back when Jimmy Johnson was the coach of the Dolphins, he figured out that, you know, maybe there's just a lot of players that might either reside around Miami or go to school around Miami. And so he started to have local workouts with 60 players. Green Bay would have a local workout and they would have half a player because they didn't have anybody residing there and they didn't have a school in their metropolitan area. So this was a rule to try to equal that out. And it's been thought out for a long time. I give a lot of credit to the General Manager's Advisory Committee, and they've put it in where each team now has a 50-mile radius to get those players if they reside in that area, and has three FBS schools that are assigned to them, all big schools, so that we just tried to level the playing field. So when you have that local workout, you can have 20, 30 players, and we just think it gives a more level playing field. What those local workouts serve us very well as is an opportunity to see some players, many of which are not going to be drafted, that you want to sign as college free agents, and so we like this rule. We think it's for this year, just for 1 year, because we want to see how it works and see if the teams take advantage of it, which I think they will.
We'll go with two more. Sal, far right.
Roger, Sal Palantonio from ESPN. Roger, there's a lot of debate about why Colin Kaepernick has not been given another chance in the National Football League, including a pretty serious allegation that he's being blackballed. When you heard that, what was your reaction? What do you think of that allegation?
I haven't heard that from our clubs in any way that's an issue. They're all, in my experience in 35 years, is that our clubs make independent evaluations of players. They work hard to try to improve their teams, and if they think a player can help them improve their team, they're going to do that.
Last question here, Jim Boswell.
This is for Dean. Could you take us through the process of if there's multiple challenges at the same time when you're watching games, how that's going to be decided?
Sure. So we've been doing this for 3 years now, since 2014. We've been involved in the replay decision-making process. And there are three people in the room, myself, our senior director of officiating, and one of our officiating supervisors that can make decisions. And so we have one person that's assigned to each game, and they're responsible for calling things to our attention. And we had a real good year last year with the three people in the room feeling out that early window on Sunday. And so if there are up to three challenges going on at once, we can manage that. And it would be a very rare instance where they would all be initiated at the same moment and have a fourth where you really couldn't get to it. By the way it flows, you can get to the replay station, and we feel comfortable with that early window of games.
Okay, thank you very much.